Well, hey everyone, I know you're inside, hopefully washing your hands and spinning records. So this is a great time to clean up your record collection. And to do that, grab some Seems Easy Record Jacket Repair Strips. Seems Easy Record Jacket Repair Strips repair any seam split, big or small. If you have some records that are looking a bit ratty, don't make them worse by taping them. Get the Seems Easy strip and repair the seam from the inside. Head over to seamseasy.com, that's two Z's, seamseasy.com, and order a 10, 25, or even 100 pack, depending on how many records you need to repair. Your seam splits will be fixed and the record sleeve will function like new. Record shop owners, you need these. Turn a $2 record into a tenner with seamseasy.com. Seems easy? That's because it is. And with that, let's start today's episode of The Vinyl Guide.
Do you listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Well, hey everyone, thanks for tuning into this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. It's Nate here, recording this in my quarantine bunker. Just me and my records and my turntable and my cartridge and a phone line, an internet connection, and about 30 cans of baked beans and not a lot else. I got my wife and children and pets upstairs too, but that's for a whole other day. Today, I am super excited about sharing this week's conversation with you all. Now, here on The Vinyl Guide, we have lots of interesting tales of various vinyl records. We invite artists on the show each week to discuss the records of their past, the stories and the anecdotes behind the collectible vinyl, and we have a lot of fun. I certainly hope you listeners enjoy the stories as much as I do and find them important to our strange, goofy little hobby. Well, today I am sharing a story about a record that isn't just for record collectors and music fans, but it's a story of how a single record, a recorded acetate by an artist that went unnamed for decades, influenced an entire culture and likely guided, possibly even kickstarted, one of the largest selling artists in all of Western civilization. This record, this single spinning disc, likely a one-off, was so beloved by the right people at the right point in history that they set off to emulate it and, in the process, invented Elvis Presley. But for many years, there was a huge missing piece to this story. While the existence of the record was well known, while the stories and the lore of its impact were widespread, the actual artist who sang on the record remained a question mark. However, that mystery has recently been solved. Today, musician, record collector, and rock and roll historian slash hobbyist Christopher Kennedy shares the story of how he helped discover the likely voice on the record that influenced Elvis, a man named Jimmy Sweeney, who is finally getting recognition with a compilation that was put together by Chris and Org Music for Record Store Day 2020. Now, when I originally spoke to Chris for this interview, this was all pre-coronavirus. The world hadn't officially turned upside down yet. Record Store Day was still set for April. But now, the record will continue to come out on Record Store Day, which has been officially rescheduled to June 20th. And I hope to God it stays with that date, because otherwise, something's gone totally wrong with the planet. So, stay inside, people. Wash your hands and bide your time until you can finally leave your caves and get to the record shop on June 20th to pick up a copy of this very, very sweet Jimmy Sweeney compilation by Org Music. Read more about it at orgmusic.com. And hey, if you like this episode, you enjoy this conversation, there's a few hundred other episodes you can enjoy too at thevinylguide.com. Including the story of John Lennon's personal copy of the Butcher cover. That's episode 57 of The Vinyl Guide, the story of Paramount Records, the legendary blues label by the equally legendary record collector John Tefteller. That's episode 93 of The Vinyl Guide, the death and burial of bluesman Robert Johnson, episode 75 of The Vinyl Guide, the career and record collection of Johnny Cash, featuring Johnny and June's son, John Carter Cash, episode 187 of The Vinyl Guide, plus heaps more, all available at thevinylguide.com, Apple iTunes, Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, you could show your love for this show at patreon.com/vinylguide. I'm going to shout out all of our Patreon supporters at the end of this episode. These folks are my homies. They help sponsor the show, and in turn, they get early access to all episodes, exclusive content, extended interviews, and more up at patreon.com/vinylguide. You can join the party too. Head over to patreon.com/vinylguide and sign up now. And with that, the upfronts are done. Please enjoy our conversation with Chris Kennedy on the mystery record that influenced Elvis.
Always at twilight, I wish on a star. Ask God to keep you wherever you are. There's time for thinking and time to regret. Time to be lonely without you.
This week on The Vinyl Guide, we have Chris Kennedy, a musician and musical historian who produced the Record Store Day release by Jimmy Sweeney, the album Without You, a compilation of songs which has an extremely interesting history, perhaps the seed that grew the tree that then grew the forest of rock and roll. So thanks for joining us today, Chris.
Hi, Nate. Thank you for having me on your great show.
Oh, well, thank you for that. You made me blush already for what, 20 seconds in. Oh, my goodness. I like the way this is going. Now, let's quickly jump into this, Chris, because, again, it's a fascinating story. The album Jimmy Sweeney, Without You, 17 songs, the history of a guy named Jimmy Sweeney that likely most listeners do not know. Is Jimmy a very popular name in music?
Definitely. I think you're right. I think a lot of people have never heard of him before, even though he had a long career and recorded a lot. But he never had a hit, and people, he flew under the radar.
So tell us the story of Jimmy Sweeney, but before the whole rock and roll business, who was Jimmy Sweeney?
Jimmy grew up in Nashville. An African-American, incredible singer, songwriter. He had five children and lived in Nashville, part-time carpenter.
He did more than singing. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Keep going. Right. And he came from a very talented family. Early on in my love of Jimmy and what he had done, I reached out to his only daughter, Eugenia, back in 2011. And I learned a lot about him through Eugenia. And, you know, he came from a very large family and talented family, you know, mother in the church choir and brother, you know, a very good performer. And he learned how to play guitar. He had been a gifted athlete and he began writing. And he had a talent that, for me, measured on the level of the all-time great rock and roll people. I thought that immediately when I heard him, he matched up with the top, Roy Orbison or Jackie Wilson or, you know, that kind of thing. And and I couldn't believe that no one had heard of him.
His voice is absolutely gorgeous. It's very compelling. Right. And how were you introduced to Jimmy's music?
I had been on tour with my band Ruth Ruth in Nashville in 1995. And we would make a habit of whatever town that we were in, we'd hit up the local record shop. And I went into a local Nashville record shop and had been digging around the 45 bin And I came upon the old, I know you're familiar with it, the old black and yellow Columbia label. I knew that the time frame for that label had to be 1959, 1958, and that would be right up my alley. And I looked at it, and I never heard of the guy, Jimmy, but I did look that the people who wrote the track on the 45 were Bodalo Bryant, who wrote all the great Everly, you know, Bye Bye Love, and I knew that I would probably like it. Right. Yeah. You know, and I bought the 45 without ever hearing him before, which I don't usually do. But I had a feeling, I had a good feeling, and I thought, well, let me take the shot. If it'll be bad, I can, you know, get rid of it. And then when I got home from the tour a month or two later, I finally got to play it, when I heard it, I couldn't believe what I heard. And from that moment on, now that had been right when the internet kind of began, and eBay, you know, I didn't have any other way to collect Jimmy other than going, you know, to a flea market or to a record show. And, you know, with the internet and eBay and everything like that, I kept collecting. And whenever I would find anything, I would pick it up.
Do you remember what you paid for that first record?
Probably a dollar.
Okay. All right. You took a chance, but it was a buck.
Right. Yeah.
Now, are there records of Jimmy Sweeney's out there that are extremely rare, expensive, hard to find, perhaps still eluding your collection?
There are, but I don't think that they're a lot of money. I don't think... maybe with the album coming out, more people will get to know him, and maybe he will become collectible. I don't know, but there are a couple that I've never found, although I know that they're out there. But yet, when they pop up, they're not much money. You know, people aren't looking for them. You do run into people collecting the label, like out of Nashville. You know, like they would have a label like Republic, or an early Nashville country label like Republic, or I can't remember right now off the top of my head, but
Hickory,
sure, yeah. Right, correct, and people collect the label, mm-hmm. But nothing to the you know, where you're going to find like a Jimmy record for like, you know, a grand or anything like that. And that had been the fun of collecting him. I never had to lay out a lot of cash, you know. Nobody, he felt like my own treasure, you know.
So as you got more into Jimmy's music, as I understand it, you stumbled a bit on the story of the recording that he did in 1954. Tell us about that recording.
Well, the recording you're talking about would be Without You. That it had been a demo recording that ended up with Sam Phillips at Sun Records. And he loved it. He loved the track. He loved the demo. Couldn't find out who did it. No one knew who did the vocal on the tune. He loved it enough that the information that I've heard had that he even thought about putting it out without knowing who had recorded it.
Well, loved was this it just, that much. Was this just something that was sent to him, you know?
That would be the thing I've tried to uncover. There are many people have a different theory on how it ended up with him. There one part would be that it came from a Nashville publisher who handed him the actual demo. Another thing had been that it came in the mail and they didn't know who it came from. I haven't really been able to find out definitively what happened. Peter Gorelnik, who wrote the biography on Sam, heard that, you know, I think he told them that he got it in Nashville from a publisher named Red Wortham. Red had been interviewed before he died and never mentioned Without You, or never mentioned that the whole thing, which had been written about repeatedly over and over in every biography I've ever read on, or book that I've ever read on early rock and roll. Mm-hmm. You know, they mentioned that they couldn't put it out. They didn't know who did it. But then Marion Kaisker at the label told him, well, why don't you have the young kid come in here with a long air and let him try it? The vocal kind of reminded her of him, and they invited him in. And that had been the beginning right there. That got him back in for an audition.
Right. And of course, the kid with the long hair was Robert Elvis. Plant. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Elvis. That's right. So Elvis had been around Sun Studios a few times, as I understand it, doing a few recordings. They were familiar with him, but they really hadn't connected in terms of seeing the true potential of Elvis. So when they heard this track, this demo of Without You, that's what inspired Marion to convince Sam to bring Elvis back to give it a shot. Is that right?
Yeah, nobody knew the potential. And he had been hanging around trying to get a record deal. Elvis had been hanging around trying to get a record deal, and he'd come in at lunchtime, and the old tale that he came in and he cut a record for his mother turned out to be kind of a quaint tale. You know what I mean? He came in there to try to get a thing going. He really wanted it. And when he got that invitation to come in and try Without You, he flipped out, you know, and he ran down there and tried it out.
As the story goes, I believe he listened to the demo. They played the acetate for him. Do you know about what that environment was like? Did he listen multiple times? Was he listening to it and then trying the song in real time? What do we know about that?
We don't know much about that other than the fact that he had been played the demo and then tried to duplicate the vocal, and unfortunately he couldn't get near it, and that aggravated him very much, and you could imagine he probably felt like oh man, I got my one shot here and I'm blowing it.
When you listen to the track Without You, I hear a lot of what became Elvis in that track. The style of singing, I guess it's the vibrato, the very soft vowels that roll off the vocal. So I can really see it, again, very much a non-musician listening. This singer sounds like someone that Elvis was almost imitating.
Right. I think you put that very well. When people hear him today, they think that they're hearing an Elvis track, you know. But yeah, he had that whole thing going on before the King of Rock and Roll had become the King of Rock and Roll. You know, he had that whole tone, he had that whole timbre. You know, maybe he did try to duplicate him, you know, try to mimic him, but pretty uncanny. I don't know if maybe I could put it another way. There are people that we know that Elvis admired and copied, like Clyde McFadder and Roy Hamilton, the way they would, you know, the way they would do a lyric or that kind of thing. He loved Clyde McFadder, and you could hear, like on Money Honey, he would copy what Clyde McFadder did. But the different thing with Jimmy, you know, Clyde McFadder and Roy Hamilton didn't really like have they didn't sound like him, but Jimmy did, you know?
Now, I understand Elvis cut an acetate to a song called It Wouldn't Be the Same Without You.
Correct.
Is that a coincidence that the words Without You, are they interrelated with Jimmy Sweeney's Without You?
No, they're completely different. They're one had been a country tune that apparently both of them admired. They both repeatedly, well, not repeatedly, Jimmy recorded it. I have a really incredible demo of that track on the record that he did with the Very Tears group that he had. And that, you know, I found that in the vault. It was really beautiful. And he did it later on Columbia, much later, like in 1958. He did another version of it. You know, I found that really intriguing that they both really liked that track. But no, Without You and that one aren't connected at all.
And there's another track, because I believe in 1960, Jimmy made another recording, and it was a cover song of She Wears My Ring, which is also on the Record Store Day compilation. And that one was actually a bit of a hit. I believe it charted in the US and Canada. And then, interestingly, about a decade later, Elvis covers that song too.
Again, correct.
Is this another coincidence?
Totally. Danny Boy too, that Jimmy cut in 55. He did a beautiful version of Danny Boy, and I put that on the record to draw the line again, the connection. That they were both connected in a really cool way that I keep uncovering and I find really intriguing. They even have when She Wears My Ring came out, they have a demo version that Elvis recorded at home, like a month or two after the record came out. So he apparently heard Jimmy again, and probably didn't make the connection to what had happened with Without You, but loved the recording and copied it at home. Yeah, so it was very cool. And then you're right. Then later on, much later on, yeah, he recorded it professionally again, and it came out on an album.
Wow. Did Elvis ever talk about Jimmy Sweeney? Did he acknowledge the influence that Jimmy may have had on his career?
No, he never did. But, you know, no one ever really properly interviewed him, ever. He died too early. I mean, he died at 42, and nobody ever really had an in-depth, deep interview that we've all kind of grown, you know, that we kind of have on every other performer that we love. You know, maybe not every performer, but, you know, no one ever really talked to him about that. I would have loved to have heard that. I would have loved to have heard what had happened according to him, you know, in the beginning, and what it felt like. And I think that would be pretty magical to be able to hear, but unfortunately, we never will.
That's interesting. 'Cause yeah, I guess throughout his career, there were always people that were protecting the myth of Elvis. Tell me about the history, or at least the known history, of this acetate. We know it showed up somehow to Sun Studios, and Marion and Sam seem to have listened to it and become very familiar with it. What do we know about what happened to the acetate after that point?
It meant enough to Marion to take it with her when she left the record company in 1958. She didn't take very much with her, you know, to mark her time at the company. But she did take the demo. She loved it that much, and she knew how important it had been in the tale of what happened, you know, with rock and roll and Elvis, and she knew and had a empathy for the performer who never got credit for, when you think about it, what if they did know? What if, what if they did know who recorded it and they put Without You out? And I think if Without You came out on that label, Jimmy would be probably known worldwide. Everybody who recorded for Sun, you know, had been in anthology after anthology, and people have written about everybody on the label. And I think it would have been a completely different thing. But, you know, they didn't. And she had a real emotional attachment to the record and took it with her when she left in 58. She kept it with her. met John Bakke, who had been her teacher. She went back to further her education later in life and met John, and they formed a friendship. And she actually invited John over one day and played it to him. And he loved it, couldn't believe it. The whole thing, he got it. John got it. and they talked a lot about who the performer could be, or, you know, what could have happened. And, you know, they both were intrigued by the whole thing. And then the way John told me, Marion, one day he had a birthday, and she left the record for him by the back door. And John then kept it after Marion had died. And the way John put it to me, when I called John and told him, "I know who did without you," he told me, "I've been waiting for you. I've been waiting for you to call." And, you know, which was kind of chilling, you know, but it actually happened that way. He thought, I knew that one day we were going to be able to find out the identity of the guy who did without you. And
it's like the great mystery of his life. He could almost now be at peace with it.
Well, John is a terrific guy and allowed me to run with the project. And rather than being guarded, or, you know, a lot of people kind of are when you're doing rock and roll detective work, you know, they may be guarded. John totally loved the whole thing, you know, that we found out the identity, and loved the idea of doing a compilation. And I've had a really terrific time working with John and putting the project together. I'm very happy with the way it came out.
So tell us about the evidence you have that this mystery singer is indeed Jimmy Sweeney.
I don't have much mm-hmm. other than my own knowledge. John would play the demo for writers who were doing, a book, like Peter Guralnick and Greil Marcus and other people like that, like, the top rock and roll writing people. And they would all write about the track and about the unknown performer. And John allowed Without You, a little clip of it, to be in a British documentary on rock and roll in 1988. And I read on a forum in 2017 that the clip of that documentary was on YouTube, and you could hear a little bit of the actual Without You demo. And I've been hearing about that my whole life, and I've never been able to hear it. And I thought, wow, I finally get to hear Without You. That'll be cool. You know, you kind of didn't know if it had been a myth, or did it really happen? Did an actual record actually, you know, was it a reality? You know, I never really knew for sure.
But that's interesting, because so there was this kind of lore about this mystery song, this mystery singer. But until John allowed it to be played and, of course, people to access it online, very few people had actually heard it. I'd say until maybe the year 2000, most people hadn't heard it.
I would imagine. Yeah. And, and nobody heard it until the documentary got uploaded to YouTube, which really didn't happen that long ago. Mm-hmm. People probably in England watched the show and maybe heard it that one time that it played, mm-hmm. you know, but, I went and I thought, wow, you know, I finally get to hear it. It would be really terrific. I kind of was thrilled that I finally get to hear what I've been reading about all my life. And from the opening line, I knew immediately. I knew Jimmy. I know Jimmy very, very well. And again, by that point, I had been collecting him for 20 years, even longer. Mm-hmm. And I knew immediately when I heard it. There was no doubt in my mind, no if or maybe. And I couldn't believe it. I thought I had to be wrong. you know, no way that I would know, you know, and no one would know but me. Yeah, you know, I really felt I felt thrilled, and I felt not very sure, even though I felt really sure. It was a weird combination. But I then contacted Eugenia, who we had been in touch by that time for like an 8-year relationship on the phone.
Jimmy's daughter, then.
Right.
Eugenia, okay.
And I played it for her, and she knew immediately from the opening line that she goes, "It was definitely my father." And then after that happened, then I began to find out, well, who had the actual record? And, you know, through looking around online, I found out that John had it. And then I finally contacted John. And like I mentioned before, when I called, I told him, you know, "I hope you don't think I'm out of my mind, but, I know who did the vocal." And then at that point he told me, "I've been waiting for you to call." and then John heard it and knew and agreed completely that Jimmy had been the guy. So can I point to a document or anything like that that showed that Jimmy recorded Without You on a particular date in 1954? I can't, but I think anybody that will hear it and then hear the compilation, there wouldn't be any doubt.
To my ears, it's quite clear. But
yeah.
Are there any other contenders for that? Are there any other names that are being floated as also possibly that mystery singer?
No. You know, I reached out to many people who I thought would know, you know, like people at the Country Hall of Fame that I've had contact with, and different people that have written about rock and roll, my favorite people that have written about it, and everybody agreed. No one ever matched up like Jimmy matched up. I mean, they're really, he had a very unique tone and a very unique way of delivering a lyric, and they're really, it left no room for doubt.
Mm. Now, where is this acetate now?
In a bank vault. Mm-hmm. In with John.
Okay. You were given special access to this acetate to be able to make the transfer for this compilation. And now, as I understand it, an acetate probably lasts about 100 or so plays. What was the condition of the acetate when you found it?
Remarkably in great shape. And John and I met in Nashville at the Country Music Hall of Fame, and where we did the digital conversion, and it played remarkably well. And when we did the album, the guy that we had, a great guy named Dave Gardner, who we had doing the audio for the album, didn't really have to work too hard. I mean, he did a great job, but he didn't have to work too hard on Without You to get it to where it felt natural, but with a little bit of a cleanup here and there, you know. So incredibly, it made it through that whole thing, you know, waiting for me to hear it and be like, "What?"
And when was the time you actually got to hear the entire play of Without You? You'd only heard a clip it from this documentary. When was it that you were actually able to then hear the entire song from beginning to end?
When I called John, he had to get the record out of the vault, and I think I probably heard the complete version in like March of 2017.
In developing this compilation, all these recordings that Jimmy made, especially for various labels, it seemed to be very sporadic, a lot of his recordings. Were you able to find any of the master tapes, or are all these, pretty much all these, transferred from records?
No, we got lucky. Like Jimmy recorded for Columbia. He recorded for Columbia in 1958 and 1959. And we have four on the album, on the compilation from Columbia, and they all came from the actual tape. Okay. And they're really beautiful, and I'm very happy about that. The Hickory catalog, we were able to find tape for that too. Wow. And I found a lot of, in the vault, I found a lot of, unissued material. And, you know, you can imagine that really thrilled me. The people that had the catalog didn't know what they had, you know, and every time I would hear anything that I knew that had never been put out, I'd freak out and they'd be like, okay, you know, take it, you know, calm down, you know. But I've included a bunch of that on the record too that are incredible, you know, they're really beautifully done, and the audio is really incredibly clear. There are a couple that came from my collection that we had to go right from the record. They were, you know, pre-tape, and we had no other option. Sure. But to go from the record. But again, we had a great guy that we were working with who kept the integrity of the recording, but could, you know, cleaned it up a bit. You know, they're not like completely clean. I mean, when you hear it, you'll know, but they are improved a little bit. And
it's part of the charm, honestly.
Yeah, I believe that too. And I think that they were important to include, and I'm happy we were able to do that.
Were there any Jimmy Sweeney tracks that you weren't able to get for this compilation?
No. Along the way, I found, you know, Jimmy recorded under many a name. I think he might have been trying to get a hit, you know, and he would record under one name for one label and then change it. You know, he recorded under Jimmy Bell for a while, and when that didn't work, he would change it again. And along the way of putting the compilation together, I found a couple more that he went under. And right now I feel like I have a pretty good handle on everything that he recorded. But he recorded for MGM too. And one record on MGM I have not been able to find ever. But they do have audio of it on YouTube. And I contacted the guy who put it up on YouTube, and he told me that the record that he had vanished a long time ago. He couldn't find it, but you can hear it on YouTube. I'm happy about that. But no, I mean, pretty much anything that I wanted for the compilation, we could get.
So I imagine there could still be some Jimmy Sweeney songs out there attributed to him, possibly attributed to a different name that we don't know about.
I'd love that. That would be terrific. Yeah. The more, the better, you know, and again, he didn't have like a huge catalog, you know, he appeared to have been active for a short time. Mm-hmm.
After Jimmy decided to move beyond the music industry, what did he do for the rest of his years?
I believe he delivered the mail. He became a mailman. He did part-time carpentry. He continued to write and demo. He had a relationship with Marty Robbins, you know, the guy who did Big Iron and he would write for Marty, and Marty would include a track or two on a record, probably for about a 10-year period, like maybe up until like 1980. I think. He didn't completely abandon it, but I think he had enough and he didn't want to be on the road anymore. By the time he retired, I think he might have been about 40, and he figured, that he took the shot and it didn't work out.
Mm. Did he ever know about his possible connection to Elvis Presley?
Not that I've been able to uncover. I think if Without You had ever actually been available, number one, if Without You had been out there, like if John had put the audio out there early on, I'm sure other people than me would have been able to make the connection. and figure it out. But the fact that it had been kind of tucked away and hidden and unheard for a very long time, I don't think anybody could ever make the connection, including Jimmy.
Well, I think, Chris, you may have just earned yourself a position on next season's mystery singer.
I think that'd be great.
It's a very unique talent you have.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely weird.
So tell us about the compilation. So it's coming out on April 18th. I've seen the cover art. The track list is about 17 tracks, if I'm right.
Correct.
Tell us about the package.
We got an incredible art team to do the packaging for the record. And I bring that up only that it had been very important to me to have the packaging have like a weight to it and have, I find it to be very important. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping other people do too. And I wanted it to have when you held the record in your hand, when you held the album in your hand, I wanted it to feel like an important thing. And I wanted to do, pay homage to Jimmy and finally try to give him a little bit of what he never had, I think. And I think we accomplished that with the packaging. We have a beautiful cover and a really terrific booklet in the album with track by track annotation. And I did the liner note writing, and I'm very happy with the way the whole package came out. And I'm very happy too with the audio. I got a copy of the record, to check out the quality, and it really probably due to the fact that it came from that time period, analog, it really played well on the record, and all the improvement that we did to the audio came off beautifully on the record. I think people are going to really like the quality of the whole thing, the quality of the packaging, the quality of the audio. And, I'm pretty thrilled with that.
The cover art looks almost like a lenticular photo where you hold it at different angles and you get a different picture. Is that right? Or,
you're totally right. It definitely, I'm pretty sure that you're not going to be able to do that, but that had been, uh-huh. You turn it, but yeah, that had been the effect that I think we were shooting for. We wanted it to be vibrant. We wanted it to be, we fooled around with kind of maybe doing it a little bit more like Nat King Cole compared to, more of a rock and roll vibe. And I think that we were able to do that. I think that the cover has got a real great energy to it. And if I were walking around in a record shop and walked by that record, I think I'd pick it up and try to be like, what could be going on here? Kind of going back to what happened to me in that Nashville shop. With the yellow and black label that caught my eye, and we were kind of paying a little nod to that too.
Well, I certainly think that there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be interested in this, especially after that story. Chris, thank you so much for joining us here. And just to remind folks, this April 18th, Record Store Day, I'm sure you all have it on your calendars. Amongst the other loot that you're planning to pick up, please consider grabbing this very vital link in the history of rock and roll, Jimmy Sweeney, Without You. There's a limited pressing, I think of 1,000 or 1,500 or something like that. It's a super sweet album. The music is gorgeous. You could read more about it at orgmusic.com. And this album I found is a real wonderful listen, even without the Elvis backstory. But with it, it's so much more compelling. So please keep your eye out for Jimmy Sweeney Without You. It's out on Org Music, April 18th. And Chris, thank you so much, not only for coming on the show, but also for your work and your dedication and your love for developing this package. This is the sort of wonderful conclusion that we love to hear about here on The Vinyl Guide.
Right. Thank you, Nate, for having me on the show. And I really appreciate having the opportunity to to talk about Jimmy.
Our pleasure entirely. Alrighty, Chris, thanks so much for coming on The Vinyl Guide and sharing that amazing story. Again, just to remind everyone, the Jimmy Sweeney compilation from Org Music is out in record shops on Record Store Day, June 20th. Get out there, grab one quick. There's a limited number of them, and it really is a fantastic album. It's a beautiful story behind it, but the music is incredible, and the voice of Jimmy Sweeney is like an angel. I think everyone will love it. So that's June 20th, the Jimmy Sweeney compilation out on Org Music. Grab one on Record Store Day at your record shop. Alrighty, and that's it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. As promised, I'm going to shout out all our patrons from patreon.com/vinylguide. These are the people that so kick ass, and I so appreciate the fact that they are helping support the show. They have love for this podcast, and we have love for them. That's Bruno Bissonette, Chuck Boyd, Dan T., David Messer, David Phillips, David Wellbeloved, Dayton Canely, Eliza, Finn Jacobson, Greg Arakawa, Gregory Plass, Gustav Lanz, James Dumont, Jen DiEugenio, John Lilliquist, John Raptis, Jonathan Maja, Marcel D'Souza, Como Está, Juan Hinojosa, Kevin Mosher, Lee Graham, Michael Howerton, Michael J. Caluzzi, what up? Mike McLennan, Ricky Harris, Regis Wax, Sean Kelly, Sean Kennedy, Tim Kickass Clifford, Timo Christopherson, Tom Grover Beery, Trostles, and Zeb Berkey. All of you, thank you so much for continuing to show love for this show. And everyone else, you're invited to join this party. Go to patreon.com/vinylguide and sign up there. We'll be back with a brand new episode soon, so until we talk next time, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.